Chaim for coming out tonight for a wonderful opportunity for us to learn Torah together as a keyboard. Special thank you to the Tiger family for sponsoring tonight's Shir. The Shir is being sponsored by Ilu Nishmas, Peshe Bas, Shreva Feibel, Yitta Esther Bas, Sveir, Mali Bas Getzalein, and Mali Bas Shlomo, all the Neshama Shabbat Aliyah, the Tremis Chus HaTorah, Chus HaTorah, Rabim, days in between Rosh Chodesh, Nisan, and the other place that we're better talking together to learn Torah. I suspect that Rabbi Leibowitz needs no introduction in our particular shul, or for that matter, probably any shul, definitely in North America, and I can pretty safely say well beyond as well. Rabbi Leibowitz is literally the embodiment of what the Mishnah tells us in Pirkei Avos, Tamidim Harbe. So many different Tamidim and so many different venues, both live and even by the Zoom screen. I think you ran out of room on the Zoom screen. So Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Leibowitz has very, very much been a force in the spreading of Torah, first and foremost in our yeshiva, and in the shul, his own shul, and really, really beyond in so many different ways. This is not the first time that I'm sharing a shtender with Rabbi Leibowitz. We have our tag team on Tuesdays in yeshiva and in the halacha, so it's for us, this is just, you know, we're used to this already. So really, it's a tremendous, tremendous chus. And really, on behalf of our Torah, we thank Rabbi Leibowitz for taking our time on his busy schedule. And in addition to the wonderful Divrei Torah, Rabbi Leibowitz has definitely... something's got to be done with the... to fulfill the Chazal trick of the Mishnah, even if it's invented yourself. I was just going to say that we thank Rabbi Leibowitz...
My good.
Chodesh Adar is over. Now we're in the Chodesh
Nisan. The Zoom meeting.
Yeah. Not so well.
You can shut the whole thing out.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry for that little post-term treat. But on a little bit more serious note, so we really want to thank Rabbi Leibowitz for taking his time out and this wonderful time to share Torah with us. And also doing our Torah a little bit of a favor as well, validating the need for a bigger shul. So Baruch Hashem, Mitzvah Hashem, Mishol Mishol Yeshua from Yerushalayim, Rakodesh. By some chance, Chalila v'Chalila, so at least in a little bit of a bigger, so a little bit more of a chavit, a tremendous man, Mr. Tavachov.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Thank you, everybody, for coming out to learn together. It's so beautiful to see so many people coming out. I understand that the men are here to avoid Pesach preparation, but that women came out to learn as well is very nice to see, that everyone came to learn together after Rosh Chodesh Nisan. You know, it only occurred to me like a day or two ago that I'm speaking to Rabbi Sablovsky's shul. Rabbi Sablovsky might be there. And that scared me a little bit. Like, I don't know why it didn't occur to me before that, but like I got very, very nervous. When Rabbi Sablovsky says we tag team, it means that for 2 weeks I say shir to my Talmidim, and he's saying shir to his Talmidim, and we save up all of our questions that need a hachra from a significant posek. 2 weeks worth of questions. We go to Rabbi Sablovsky, usually in under a half hour, boom, 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 on a topic that he's not learning this year, as far as I know, and he's machria all of our shilas. So I was, I think, understandably nervous to when I realized that it's Rabbi Sablovsky's shul, will probably be here. But then I pulled up and to park over here, and I got a WhatsApp message from my son. And the WhatsApp message said, Abba, please read over this speech. I have to speak in front of Rabbi Sablovsky this Shabbos, and I'm really nervous. So I guess it's genetic. I mean, his is an upper speech, so he has reason to be nervous. But it's a great pleasure and honor to be together with you. And what I wanted to talk about tonight, obviously something Pesach related, but I wanted to touch on a particular theme that I think is especially meaningful around Pesach time, and that is the theme of time in general. Now, time is a very, it's a universal concept, but it also has particularly Jewish significance to it. And while we're going to talk a little bit in halacha, hopefully we'll talk a little bit in hashkafa as well. I was asking John Tiger whether I should speak halacha or hashkafa. He said, you know, you're in Rabbi Sobolevsky's shul, you're going to try to speak halacha. He didn't say it exactly that way, but like, I've made pretty much my entire career out of doing a poor imitation of Rabbi Sobolevsky teaching halacha, so I'm going to shift from halacha to hashkafa. So the concept of time comes up, I think, in four different ways on the night of the Seder, probably more, but I'd like to touch upon four particular ways, and because four is a big number by the Seder, so you got to pick, if you're going to pick a number, it has to be four. So to touch upon the four ways that time has unique meaning on the night of the Seder, and then discuss perhaps with each one how it what we could derive from some of those halachic sensitivities. So the first and most obvious relationship that we have with time on the night of the Seder is that you have to do things on time. You have to do things in the right time. You have to start after a certain time. You have to finish before a certain time, right? Halacha is Ein Maftir Nachar Pesach Hafikomen, and there's a whole discussion in the Rishonim and the Achronim what exactly needs to get done by Chatzos. The Chumash Rashba writes that Hallel has to be done before Chatzos. The Gra explains that you need the fourth kos before Chatzos, meaning we're so familiar with the idea that the Hafikomen is to be done by Chatzos, but it could very well be that you have to finish not just the Avikomen, the Ramah writes, you have to finish Halel before Chatzos as well. So there is a certain time pressure to the Seder, especially since there's so much time often spent on the first parts of the Haggadah, the parts that perhaps are maybe from a halachic perspective, and really every perspective, a little less critical in the Haggadah, but that creates a certain time crunch, to the point that so many families utilize the questionable Tanai of the Avnei Nezer in order to try to make it so that they can eat their afikomen before Chatzos, but really eat it after Chatzos and continue their Seder a long time after Chatzos. And all of the mitzvot halayla have a particular zman. So that's in one sense where doing things in the right time comes up on the night of the Seder, but there's also a time pressure within each and every mitzvah. When it comes to eating matzah and to drinking the dalet kosos and to eating maror, there's a halacha that a person has to eat and drink in the right amount of time. The halacha is one must eat a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras. How exactly do we determine what is a kezayis b'chdei achilas pras? So a kezayis is its own cheshbon, and how we figure out how much time it takes to eat a pras of pas lechem or of matzah, depending on machlokes aposkim, is also a very significant discussion. Some people, Rav Schechter often points out that he does not like the practice that some people have of stuffing matzah in their face as much as they can, to the point that they almost choke and that you end up having to call Hatzalah because people are choking on the night of the Seder. But that's actually subject to machlokes between the Minchas Chinuch and the Mishnah Brura. Maybe now is not the right time to go into that discussion in halacha as far as how much a person has to eat, in what amount of time a person has to eat. But the overall theme, that the timing of things is important, that when we do something is important, and is certainly something that is critical on the night of the Seder. And in Hashkafa we find this as well, in many areas outside of Pesach, that the idea that you have to not only do the right thing, but do the right thing in the right time. The Mishnah tells us a person is not supposed to be mefayis eschavero b'shas ka'aso. If a person is angry, you have to know how to apologize, but you also need to know when to apologize. There's actually a book, if you're into like these self-help, pop psychology books, there's a book called When. That's the name of the book, When. And the whole idea of the book is that you could do all the right things, but if you do them at the wrong time, it doesn't work. Rav Lichtenstein Zichron Levracha used to quote from one of his great rebbeim, from Rav Huttner. He used to say that Rav Huttner used to comment that if a yeshiva bachar understood that missing Zman Kriya Shema is like shaking a lulav on Chanukah, maybe he'd wake up on time for Shachris. Meaning, if you understand that shaking a lulav on Chanukah doesn't do anything, it's the wrong time to do it. It's not only that we do things and that we do the right thing, it's that we do the right thing at the right time. And sometimes there's a lot of pressure to do things at the right time. And time pressures are very often very healthy for us in life in general. A lot of times when a person feels that they're under pressure, they work harder, they work better, they work more efficiently. A lot of times people will procrastinate something for 7 months and then they'll do it in an hour because they know that they have to do it in that final hour when they reach that deadline. So that's one area in the Seder where time comes up, and that's really the most obvious area, and the one I don't want to dwell too much on. The second area where time comes up in the Seder is the concept that we actually raise ourselves above time. We're not actually constricted by the normal haluch yelech of history. See, time normally only goes in one direction, right? We can't go backwards in time, right? Well, what's the old joke that, I don't know if it's an old joke, but that the bartender says, no, I'm sorry, we don't serve any time travelers here. A time traveler walked into a bar, right? Meaning, like, it doesn't, no, come on, a little bit. No. So it doesn't work that way. Time only goes in one direction, and we can't really defy that. We can't stop time, we can't speed up time, we can't go backwards in time, and yet, somehow, on the Seder night, it's one of those rare points during the year where we actually can do that. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Pesach, Mitzrayim hasn't been a major empire in a long, long time, and yet we see ourselves as if we left Mitzrayim. The Rambam famously formulates it, not just liros hasatzma, but laharos hasatzma. We need to behave, we need to act as if we are leaving Mitzrayim. In fact, there's a beautiful sefer on Pesach called Magid HaRakia, written by a friend of mine, Rav Daniel Gladstein. He's from the Rav in the Five Towns, and he's written many, many Sfarim, but in his Sefer on Pesach, Magid HaRakia, he develops the following Mahalich in terms of just how the night of the Seder itself works. He points out, the Seder starts, the Magid starts with a form of Birchas HaTorah, right? Baruch HaMakom, Baruch Hu, I'm not going to sing it, Baruch That's Birchas HaTorah. Baruch Hu. Rav Soloveitchik suggested that, yeah, because every different form of Talmud Torah requires its own form of Birchas HaTorah. You say Birchas HaTorah in the morning, but then again, you get an aliyah and you say another Birchas HaTorah because it's a different form of Talmud Torah. And the Seder night is really Talmud Torah. That's what we're doing. We're darshaning psukim. We're learning Torah. We're teaching our children Torah. That's what the Seder night is. And because it's a unique form of Talmud Torah, it demands its own Birchas HaTorah. But what's so interesting is that's Rav Soloveitchik's Mahalich. But otherwise, it's somewhat odd to understand, why is it that we have a Birchas HaTorah that's not covered by the Birchas HaTorah? Why is it that the Talmud Torah we're doing at the Seder isn't already covered by the Birchas HaTorah we say in the morning? It is somewhat unusual to just pop up in the middle of the day or at night before night Seder and say a new Birchas HaTorah. Rabbi Glassine also points out, Pasuk says, V'igad to levincha bayom ahu, Bavur ze b'sha'a sheish matzo umarar munachim lefanecha. B'sha'a sheish matzo umarar munachim lefanecha. When is matzo umarar munachim lefanecha? When is that? That's only on the night of the Seder. And the Seder has to be done, we just spoke about before, at night. And what's the limud from the pasuk? Bayom ahu. Bayom ahu. It's not balayla hahu, it's not balayla hi, it's bayom ahu. Why is it that the Seder night is referred to as a yom? The Gra asks, even though it's questionable grammatically whether it's a kasha, but the Gra asks, we say, manashana ha layla hazeh. The Gra says, really, it should be halayla hazos, because the word layla is a lashon nekeva. Again, questionable, you have to look through Tanakh. But the Gra raises a question, so it must be Akasha. Halayla hazeh, it should have been halayla hazos. The Shlach HaKadosh points out that the Chachamim were up, kol oso halayla. But wait, it should have been kol Osa halayla. They should have been up Osa halayla. Shlach HaKadosh also asks that the Talmidim came and they said, Rabbi Seinu, he gives man kriyash mashal shachris. What, v'chi Rabbi Sehem lo ra'u? Did the Rebbeim not know that it was he gives man kriyash mashal shachris? How were they not aware that the morning had arrived? And another question. Pasuk says, they were told to leave at night, but they didn't leave at night. They left in the morning, they left in midday. Not at night. So the Yetzias Mitzrayim creates all this confusion. What is the Iker Zman of Yetzias Mitzrayim? Is it Laila or is it Yom? You know, we talk about the night of the Seder, but the night of the Seder is called Halayla Hazeh, not Halayla Hazos, which is unusual. The night of the Seder is referred to as Vigat Vincha by Yom Hahu. It's referred to as a day and not as a night. And we left Mitzrayim, even though we were technically free to go at night. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Chaf, the Gemara tells us, Mishnah tells us, that Kol HaYom is kasher l'kriyas HaMegillah, and Kol HaYom is kasher for Kriyas HaHalel. And yet, the night of the Seder, we say Halel at night. That's troubling also. Rav Warman says and asks in one of his farm, if you have any Hank alumni here, they always know who Rav Warman is. There we go. Rav Warman was a big Talmud Chacham. I remember when I was in Rav Shachter Shir, one of the boys brought Rav Warman's newest Sefer to Rav Shachter at the time. We had one of the Oros Sfarim, and Rav Shachter was very excited to receive it. He was a phenomenal Talmud Chacham. He was Rav Shiva of Hank for many years, and an outstanding Talmud Chacham. So Rav Warman asks in one of his Sfarim, and it's a Kasha, that how could it be that there's Halel on the night of the Seder? Kol HaYom is Kasher L'Kriyas Halel. You don't say Halel at night. Not only that, the Gemara in Shabbos, Taf Kuf Lamed Beis, darshans from a pasuk that Milah's only during the day. But the Milah's Mitzrayim, Rav Warman points out, was at night. So you're not supposed to do Milah at night. So what was going on that night of the Seder? What is it about this night? So the Yesod that Rabbi Gladstein develops, which I think is such a beautiful Yesod, he says the secret is in the piyut of Ayihi b'chatzi alayla, at the end of the Seder, where it says, Ta'ir ka'or yom, chashchas layla, that it was the darkness of night had lit up ka'or yom, like the light of day. See, apparently, the Seder night, even though it happens at night, in a certain sense, it becomes like daytime. It has a certain element of daytime, which means that we defy the normal rules of Zman. It had become day. The Shlach HaKadosh explains, that's why we call the Seder night Yom. V'igad t'levincha b'yom ahu, b'shash yesh matzah mar l'fanecha, says the Shlach HaKadosh, because it is Yom in a certain sense. The nighttime becomes the Etzem Hayom, and that's maybe why we use the Lashon Zachar. It's Halayla Hazeh, and not Halayla Hazos, because Yom is Zachar. It's Mi'ira Kiyom, the nighttime lights up like day. The Chidah explains that Mila was permitted on Seder night because, says the Chidah, the Seder night has a certain Bechina of day. Whatever that means, that there's some sort of elevating ourselves beyond the normal constrictions of time. The Arugas HaBosami explains that Rabbi Seinu reached the Madrega the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which made the night seem like day. And only the Talmidim seemed to notice the sunrise, because for everybody else, it already was day. For the Chachamim themselves, it already was day. And this is such a fascinating idea, that we have the ability to transcend the limitations of time, that not only do we go back and we reenact, and not just reenact, we see ourselves as if we are actually leaving Mitzrayim, but the very night is really a daytime and a nighttime at the same time. And sometimes the halacha requires of us, and the Avodas Hashem simply requires of us, that we transcend time, that we not be bound by the limits of time, that we forget about the clock. You know, before Yom Noraim, I like to send out to all my Bali Tefillah and my Bali Tekiah and Shul like something to think about. A list of things. So we usually have a meeting together, give them a list of cholim to be mispalel for, and different challenges in the community to think about, and a variety of different things to think about. And I wasn't really sure the first time I wanted to do that. How do I present it? What are the main points? to hit, what are the main points to think about. So I have some connections in Rabbi Neuberger Shul. So I was able to get from one of the Balei Tefillah, it wasn't Michael, from one of the Balei Tefillah in Rabbi Neuberger Shul, what he sends out. And I noticed one of the things that he says is when you are leading the Tzibur in Tefillah, in Yom Narayim, there is no clock. You cannot be constricted by the clock. Ignore the clock. What you're doing is too important to be looking at the clock. What you're doing at that time is too critical to be bound by time. So yeah, chayiv laharos. How we outwardly behave really impacts us on the inside. We act in such a way where we really start to feel it. We really start to believe. You know, there are families that have a minhag where they put the matzah on their shoulders and they walk around the table. They whip each other. Also, all sorts of things we do it in such a way that really rises above time. And that's the second way that I think time is critical on the night of the Seder. So two out of four so far, right? The first one we discussed is how timing is so important on the night of the Seder, that you have to do the mitzvos within the right time, after nightfall, before chatzos, within kazayis b'kedei achilas pras, that the timing of everything is so important, and how that reflects itself in so many different areas of life. And second, we discussed how sometimes we need to transcend time. We need to be above and beyond whatever the normal limitations of time, and that's really the entire experience of the Seder. That's what we're doing. We are transcending time by transforming ourselves back into avadim in Mitzrayim. We're actually experiencing a yitzias. Eitzias Mitzrayim. And it could be that the Seder night, in that sense, transcends time in that it is a shtickle yom. It is a little bit like a yom. And a third way that time plays a critical role is that in order to experience the Seder properly, a person has to express patience. And patience is one of the more challenging things to deal with when you're discussing the topic of time. Because patience means that I'm anxious, I want to do something, I want to get it done, and I have to wait. I have to let it play out. The halacha is, the Yerushalmi tells us, kala ochel matzah be'erev Pesach ki'ilu ba ala rusaso be'beis chamav. It's an unusual mashal. It's a difficult mashal. The Rishonim struggle with it. Someone who eats matzah on Erev Pesach, it's as if he was boel as arusa bebeis chamav, that he didn't wait until the wedding, and he went and he had tashmish with his arusa while she was still living in her father's house. Right? I remember Rav Yonason Sacks told me when he said shir once, and the man came over to him afterwards, and he said, "I don't know, Rabbi, I tried both, and they didn't feel at all the same." But I think it's an old Jackie Mason line. I don't think it was. I think whoever was listening to Sacks shir was lifting material from Jackie Mason. But the Yerushalmi means something by that. But on the most fundamental level, what it probably means is that a person needs to be patient, that there's a right time, and sometimes when you're ready for something, it's not ready for you. And that, those involved in Shiduchim know this comes up all the time, that it has to be the right time. And sometimes people have to allow things to play out. You know, there's a major machlokas Rishonim, how to understand that comparison, that ochel matzah on Erev Pesach is ki ilu bo'el arusasa bebeis chamav. The Magen Mishnah in Hilchos Chametz Matzah calls it an erusin of the matzah. You know, the bir chametz makes it like it's also the kol olam, and yet it's not. The matzah does not yet have a heter labayla. Meaning, you do the bir chametz, so the matzah becomes asur l'kol olam. The matzah becomes asur on Erev Pesach. Just like under a chuppah, when they do the kiddushin before they do the nisuin, so they're married enough that she's an ashes ish, that she's a sura to the rest of the world, but they're not yet married enough that they're allowed to go home together. So there is that in between time where it's ki'ilu bolar sasabes chamav, because the matzah became aser, but the matzah does not yet become mutter until become a mitzvah until that night. The levush has a different mahalich. The levush says no. The reason that we have such a comparison, that eating matzah on Erev Pesach is kilu bolar sasa beis chamav, says the levush, is that it shows an enormous amount of taiva v'ra'avtanus, an amount of desire and gluttony, that a person is like famished. and cannot hold back, and goes and feeds himself when it's not yet the proper time to do so. And that's kilu balar asas beis chamav, that a person just can't control their taiva. It's a lack of self-control. The Rambam in Ilchus Chametz Matzah throws in one key word that seems to take on a different, it seems to give this halacha a different significance. The Rambam writes, you know why you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach? Kidei shiya heker la'achilasa be'erev. That there should be a recognizable, something recognizably different about the fact that you're eating matzah at night. There's a heker in the achila that evening. And the Bahag in Hilchos Pesach says that no, it just builds up a certain excitement. It shows a chavivus when you get to build up a certain energy and excitement. It's a way of showing chavivus hamatzah by not having it earlier. So it's ki'ilu, the mashal, it's like the chasen and kala that don't see each other the week before the wedding. You know that din d'oraisa that you're not allowed to see each other the week before your wedding. It's yarig val yavar. Does it start at Rabbi Sala? I'm sure the Rabbi gets the shayla all the time. Does it start at shkia? Does it start at seis? When exactly is that din? Does that din apply? So that, but what's the idea behind that practice that people do? You can't even call it a minhag. What's the idea behind that practice that people do, that they don't see each other? Because it creates that sense of excitement and energy at the Badekin, or at least so the story goes, right? That it's supposed to feel a sense of excitement and chavivus. So that's what the Bahag says. Matzah Erev Pesach is usher because of the chavivus that it generates by withholding from it until the right time. So four shitos and rishonim as to why it is that we're not supposed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach, either because it's literally like an erusin from the time of the Yisr Chametz, or because it shows, like the Levush says, taiva and raftanus, it's a total lack of self-control, or as the Rambam says, it's a heker, or as the Bahag says, to just build up a certain sense of energy and excitement similar to a badekin. L'may nafkamina, so it could be three nafkaminas between these four different approaches. Nafkamina number one is, when does the Yisr start? Meaning, you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. When on Erev Pesach you're not allowed to eat matzah? So the Ramban in Maseches Pesachim says that it starts at Alos HaShachar. That morning, you're not allowed to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. And that's how we paskin in the Ramban. So in Tafayin Aleph, paskins that way. That wouldn't fit the first approach of the Magen Mishnah. The Magen Mishnah says, no, the Isser of matzah is Erusin. It's only after Chametz becomes Aser. So once Chametz becomes Aser, so matzah is not yet mutter, that's the in-between stage. That's not Alos HaShachar, that's much later in the day on Erev Pesach. So that wouldn't fit with the first Mahalich. The Rush writes that the Yisr starts Mishesh Shalos Solamayla. That fits very nicely with that first Mahalich of the Magen Mishnah, that it's like Erusin. Most Rishonim say, for sure there's no Yisr at night. Because you know what the biggest riot is, that there's no Yisr Tim Matzah at night? Shebechol HaLeilos. What do you mean? If it starts at night, you're not allowed to eat matzah the night before. It's not such a great raya, right? Because that's the raya. So another nafkamina might be, what kind of matzah is included? There happens to be four shitos about that as well. What matzah are you not allowed to eat? Are you allowed to eat egg matzah? What if you have bitzeko shel nachrim? What if you had a nachri that made matzah and he didn't make it lishma? So you can't use that matzah for the Seder anyway. Are you allowed to have that? So Tosfos writes that it's only matzah that you could use for the mitzvah. Because the whole idea is that the heter l'baila comes at night, and up until that point, that which is going to be mutter later, that which is going to be the mitzvah later, is right now going to be aser. The Ram Chalava says that it's all matzah. All matzah. Matzah ashira, matzah b'tzekah shulkutim, it's all matzah. That might just be about the fact that it's taiva v'raftanos. That if a person can't control himself, you have to control yourself from all matzah. The Tashbeitz and the Marsha suggest that it includes matzah that's not shmura matzah, but matzah ashira's mutter on Erev Pesach. Why? Because if you were to have matzah that is perfectly not chametz, it's perfectly matzah, and the only ingredients are flour and water, but no one had kavanah l'shma, right, you went to the matzah bakery and you walked in and there was silence. And you're like, wait a second, what's going on over here? I thought you were supposed to say the Shem, not the Mitzvah. Right? How come no one's doing that? And they say, oh, whoops, we forgot, right? And then they start doing it. Then they start doing the Shema. So you have two matzahs. One they were just making because they were just practicing. And the other, but they're exactly identical. Two matzahs that are exactly identical. So would there be a hecker if you were eating the one that was not made the Shema the rest of the day and you're eating the one that... There wouldn't be a hecker. They're physically identical. They physically look exactly the same. So if the reason is hecker, then there's no reason to... then we have to aser the matzah that's shalo l'shma as well. If it's about chavivas ha-mitzvah, the Tosos Rid sheet that makes sense. Tosos Rid writes in one of his dales that matzah ashira is aser, but matzah shenem shemeres is mutter. So it's about chavivas ha-mitzvah, you refrain from that which is mishum l'shma, that which is actually the kind of thing that has that sense of l'shma on it. So this third idea, that sometimes, again, leaving out all the lumdas for a moment now, just the idea that one has to express a certain amount of patience. You know, there's something remarkable about people who are patient, about people who know how to just wait for things to play out. And that is that sometimes they don't need to be nearly as patient as they initially think they will have to be. Sometimes if a person doesn't push something, it comes to them much more quickly. And this is in fact exactly what happened. It's exactly what happened with Yetzias Mitzrayim. We had to express an enormous amount of patience. 400 years we were going to be in Galus. And we knew that there's no compromising on that. You know, the meaning of the number 400, it has significant meaning in Hashkafa and in the Hasidish Svarim. I'm not so familiar with all the Hasidish Svarim, but one of our colleagues in Yeshiva, a dear friend of Daniel Stein, in his Sefer Chamudei Daniel in Parshas Bo, has all these beautiful remazim to the value of the number 400 and why the number 400 was so meaningful to Klal Yisrael. He points out that Chassam Sofer Misachs Brachos, not a Chassid, Chassam Sofer is one of those that everybody claims him. You're a Chassidish, you're Yaki, you're a Litvish. Everyone claims the Chassam Sofer. He's Matzachain, in the Ve'inei Kolam. So the Chassam Sofer writes that Rav Ashi was Mesadr the Gemara, and they call Shas Talmud, because it's the Osios Tuf Limud. Tuf, the letter Tuf, which is 400. That in order to learn it, to learn a Masechta well, you need to learn it 400 times. The Arizal writes in Sefer Eitz Chaim that the reason HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Makdim Golos Mitzrayim to Kabbalah Satorah and to entering, to having Eretz Yisrael, Klal Yisrael enter Eretz Yisrael, was to be Makabal the Torah and to be Zochet Eretz Yisrael, which includes 400 Madregos of Kedusha. We had to overcome Eretz Mitzrayim, which with its 400 Madregos in Kochos Hatumah. What does that mean? I don't know. But I know that he uses the number 400, right? And he says that was important because we can't get into Eretz Yisrael unless we have 400, unless we get rid of all 400 of the Kochos Hatumah. And then guess what happened? They got out after 210 years. It was an early dismissal. We were patient, we waited, and then we got out after 400 years. Those who tried to leave early, it didn't work out so well for them. But when you wait, and you think you're going to have to wait, however long it is, b'sofa shel davar, at the end of the day, after 210 years, we got out. And apparently, part of the lesson is that when a person is patient, good things eventually will come to a person. You know, a lot of times in Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, patience is a very critical mida. You know, one of the things that we teach chassanim when we give chassan classes, that a lot of chassan teachers will give shalom bayis tips along the way, is that, you know, you're a guy. So when you're a guy, what do you do? How do you get ready for a chasana? So, you put on your jacket. You know, that's it. Okay, now I'm ready. You know, it's tighten the tie. Nah, they don't really care anymore. You can go with a loose tie also now to a chasana. You don't need to do anything. You're ready. But you get married, and your wife might take some time to get ready. Morena Rav Willig Shlita often tells young men that are sitting there impatiently looking at their watch, I have a very chashuv job at the wedding. I'm an aide on the Tanoim. You know, the show can't go on without me. You know, we have to get out of here already, you know. So Rav Willick says, be maver sedra. Be maver sedra. But Rebbe, I already finished sedra. Be maver next week sedra. just but I finished that the next week. Just keep going. And then you'll appreciate all that time you had to be maver sedra. Sometimes being patient is oftentimes a critical virtue for a person to have. And then there's one last lesson of time that I think is probably the most critical lesson that relates to time, and that is the value of the moment. And that's something that you can't really, I mean, there are probably Torah points to bring this out, but it's so experiential and it's so obvious that the night of the Seder is such a critical time to capitalize and to make sure that it's done properly and that we take advantage and that we have a meaningful Seder. And that we have a Seder that we, you know, it only comes around once a year, and that we take proper advantage of it when it comes around. And I don't mean that we have a perfect Seder. There's no such thing as a perfect Seder. Right? Sedarim are meant to be perfectly imperfect. Someone is supposed to forget the Manishtana and cry and run out of the room, and someone else, I mean, all of that stuff is supposed to happen. All of the things, but I have another Dvar Torah, how come you're not letting me say it? All of that, it's all supposed to happen. And you know what? The kids are going to remember only the best parts of it. They're only going to, everything is going to be recalled fondly. Moreno Rav Willick Shlita says that at his Seder every year, he says the same exact Divrei Torah every single year. And his kids roll their eyes. Oh, here he's going to say, you know, now the grandchildren are ready, rolling their eyes. Oh, he's going to say it again, the same Divrei Torah every single year. And he said, you know what? After 120, my kids are going to say those same Divrei Torah. And they're going to remember that this is what the Zaydi used to say. And my grandkids are going to say those same Divrei Torah. That to create, to take advantage of that moment where you define yourself as a family, as members of Klal Yisrael. You know, the Gemara tells us in a few different contexts that Yesh Kono Olamo B'Shah Achas, that a person has the ability to take a moment of time and make it extremely, extremely meaningful. Person could be kona olamo b'sha'a achas means that there's a lot of power latent in a moment of time. In the Hakdama of the Bir Agra on Shulchan Aruch, the Bir Agra on Shulchan Aruch was written by the Gra's children. The Gra didn't publish, and within 10 years after the Gra died, almost everything was published, because he had a few Talmidim and his children that were made it their mission right after the Gra passed away to try to publish whatever they could from the Gras, or Menachem Mendel Mishklov and the Gras children, and some others were involved in making sure that everything should get out. So the Hakdama, the Bir Agra on Shulchan Aruch is fascinating. It tells you some of the hanhagos that the Gra had, and sometimes children know more than anybody else, you know, of how special or not a person is, and in the case of the Gra, more special than anyone else could have ever realized. And they write, Ki ikar tochachto haisa el akrovim ha'omdim lefnim, lo'odia gam el rechokim. His main mussar that he would give to those in his inner circle, to those who were near him, was to go out and shout from the rooftops, let everybody know, let the rechokim know, let people far away know, shelo yotziu zmanam be'efes tikva. Don't waste time. Lios kol ish einov pekuchos al chelke zmano l'regoyim ivchanenu, that everyone should have their eyes open to the power of a moment, to channel in what you can accomplish in that power of a moment. V'shetia hotza zmano b'dvar mayoser yikarim she'efshar, to use your time for the most precious things you can. V'hu, and in case you don't know what that is, says the Gra, I'll tell you what it is. Esek ha'Torah v'ha'avoda, uliz dariz ba'lifal ba'otzim ha'charitzus. You should do this with great, great alacrity and great energy. You know, there's a commentary on the Haggadah called the Yad Chazaka from Rav Yitzhak Isaac Chaver. Rav Yitzhak Isaac Chaver was not a Talmud of the Gra, he was a Talmud of a Talmud of the Gra. What does it mean, a Talmud of the Talmud of the Gra? What happened was, in the last 2 years of the Gra's life, Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov moved to Vilna. And he wanted to learn from the Gra. So the Gra didn't have a yeshiva. The Gra didn't have Talmidim in the conventional sense. People tried to get close, and most people were kept out, and some people were allowed in. And that's why in the Akdama of the Bir Agra, Shulchan Aruch, it says who his Talmidim were. Rav Chaim Blasner and a few others. So Menachem Mendel Mishklov was one of them. He came to Vilna for the last 2 years of the Gra's life, and that's where he received all the Gra's Kabbalah and many other things from the Gra. after the Gra passed away. Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov stayed in Vilna for another 10 years before he moved to Eretz Yisrael, and they named the street in Har Nof after him. Right? But he stayed in for another 10 years. You know, all the Rebbeim in Keren Biavne used to live on Mishklov. It's Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov. But he was from the Talmidei Gra, made Aliyah. So in those 10 years, this young teenager, a 14-year-old kid, Yitzchak Isaac Chaver, moved to Vilna. Rav Menachem Mendel Mishklov took him under his wing for a couple of years. He taught him all the Kabbalah of the Vilna Gaon. I guess he got confused between 14 and 40. I don't know, but I guess it was okay that he was allowed to learn Kabbalah. And he became one of the greatest mekubalim of the children of the Gra. His perush Yad HaChazaka on the Haggadah, which is the Haggadah I'm using a lot this year, is very straightforward. It's not you're not like levitating after. You know, it's very, very, very straightforward. Very straightforward commentary on the Haggadah. And what he points out about Halach Ma'anya is that there are really two lessons in the Halach Ma'anya, that in matzah in general. And those lessons frame Avodas Hashem. Number one is Lach Ma'anya, that the lechem that we had with the Korban Pesach, al matzah smor miyachluhu, had to be lechem oni because kachi darka shel Torah, that the Torah is accomplished when a person does not overindulge in gashmius. But also, there was a timing element. There was the moment of Makas Bechoros and the moments of Yitzias Mitzrayim, and the moments happened so quickly that the dough didn't have time to rise, and the power of those moments is highlighted from the very beginning of the Seder until the end of the Seder. And there's something amazing HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us control over Jewish time. Right, so we just had Parshas HaChodesh, HaChodesh Hazeh Lechem. It meant that human beings were going to call the shots as far as when the month starts and when the month ends. It's HaKadosh Baruch Hu is telling us that I'm not only going to redeem you from the mindset of slavery, I'm going to allow you to transcend what seems impossible to transcend. I'm going to allow you to transcend time and to control time. And maybe there's a message in that, in the ability that we have to control how we spend our time, what we do with our time. You know, a few years ago, and these statistics are a few years old, I came across some statistics on smartphone usage. People spend an average of 3 hours and 15 minutes a day on their phones. And then, a year later, Americans spend 5.4 hours a day using their phones. Millennials, 5.7 hours a day. Baby boomers, 5 hours a day, and that's just to find the right emoji. People check their phones 58 times a day on average, more than half of those during working hours. And if you are like me, your first thought when you hear these numbers is, that's it? Right? It's much more, no? 58 times? I don't know, that's like, I give shiur, I come back, and there are 58 WhatsApps. Right? I mean, what do you mean? 58 times. But we can control how we use our time. And if we're constantly scattered and constantly distracted and constantly being pulled in to use our time in a way that is not productive, so we have to think of ways to be able to focus our time in a more valuable way. And the night of the Seder teaches us these four lessons. So to chazer over quickly, we learned four things about the night of the Seder and about time. First is that timing in general is important in Yiddishkeit. It's important in Kiyumei HaMitzvos. It's important in all the mitzvos of the night of the Seder. There's such a thing as Zman Kriya Shema. There's such a thing as the Zman Achilas Matzah, the Zman that you could be Yotzei, the Dalakosos, the Zman to be Yotzei, the mitzvah of Yitzias Mitzrayim, B'shah Sheish Matzah Umaru Munachum Lefanecha, and sometimes there's a time pressure, there's a time crunch when we do it. And from there we learn the value of not only doing the right things, but doing the right things in the right time, of how to time things properly. Second thing we learned is that a person sometimes has the ability to transcend time. Time can stand still. Time can fly. We have the ability, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability certain times of the year. You know, there used to be one of the, Avram Fried, I think, is one that made famous as a song, but it was from a medieval sefer that says, Ha'avar ayin v'ha'asir adayin Vahova Keheref Ayin Da'aga Minayin. Again, I'm not going to sing it, but the idea was that, you know, the past is gone, the future's not here yet, and the present just is gone in the blink of an eye, so why worry about anything? So Rav Soloveitchik did not like that phrase. He thought that that's not the Jewish Hashkafa. Havar Ayin, the past is gone? What are we doing all night at the Seder if the past is gone? We're traveling back into the past. No, the past, we get to relive the past. Asir Adayin? The futures, what do we say? L'shana haba b'Yerushalayim. We have that vision of the future right in front of us. We know exactly what the goal is. The asid is very much something we live with each and every day. And that gives meaning to the hova. That ability to transcend time, to go backwards and forwards in time. And that's the night of the Seder. The night of the Seder is a night and a day at the same time. It's halayla hazeh. And the third lesson, to know how to be patient. The halacha is, some Rishonim don't understand that the Bavli doesn't hold that way, but we paskin this way in Shulchan Aruch, that patience is a critical virtue. And we discussed the various shittos in Rishonim as to why it's Bala Rusasu Beis Chamav, but we also discussed how sometimes when you express a certain amount of patience, it's painful at first, but eventually things come at you much more quickly and in a much more gratifying way. And then the final lesson of time was to just appreciate the value of a moment, how laden a moment can be with potential. Yesh kona olam b'sha'a achas, V'chaim Shulevitz says in the famous Musar Shmuz that the reason Bacha Rebbe, the reason he cried when he realized that Yesh kona olam b'sha'a achas is because if that's the value of a single moment, how much value is there in a whole day, in a whole hour, in a whole day, in a whole week, in a whole month? How much there is to tap into in a moment? The story goes, I think a grandson of Rapam told me that his grandfather once heard of someone that was sick in the hospital that he was acquainted with. And Rav Palm couldn't go visit the hospital, he's a kohen, so he wrote a note, Rafua Shalema note. And when unfortunately the person passed away, Rav Palm went to be Menachem Avel. And the Avelim said, Rav Shiva, you should know the impact that your note had on our father. It was incredible. He held on to that note every day when he was in the hospital. He read it and reread it. It was something that he held close to his heart. We hold, it gave him more time on this earth. It gave him so much chizik, that note that you gave him. And Rav Palm started to cry. And he said, Rav Shiva, we were trying to be mechazik you. Please don't cry. And he said, no, it took me 30 seconds to write that note. It took me a minute. What does it take to write a note? And look what you could accomplish in a minute. Look what you could accomplish in a shah achas. So there is a time crunch on the night of the Seder. But let's, Be'ezer Hashem, make sure that we're able to use that moment to its max and thereby transcend time and be able to see that indeed, L'shana Haba, B'Yerushalayim.